Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Grounded Podcast. We're supposed to have an episode come out today, part two of the Climate Change, What Can We Do to Curb It Now episode, but that's going to be delayed until tomorrow. But today, I'm going to throw a bonus episode your way. Enjoy. This is Tony with the Grounded Podcast. While you guys are eagerly awaiting new episodes of the Grounded Podcast, here's an encore presentation. Hey everyone, I'm Tony, your host of the Grounded Podcast. This podcast is all about sustainable living, urban and not so urban living, homesteading and healthy eating with a healthy dash of permaculture principles and environmentalism. This podcast came from a blog I started nearly two decades ago after accidentally stumbling into gardening while in my mid-teens three decades ago. And I've been hooked ever since. Now, aside from being a foodie, hippie, hipster, film pundit, traveler, 80s enthusiast, self-proclaimed chef, and I do mean self-proclaimed chef, I'm also a homesteader, an urban homesteader. Now, most importantly, I'm a father, small business owner, organic gardener, and just too much more to name here. So welcome to my sustainable yet attainable home garden. Okay, so you're a new gardener, right? And you're trying to get your seeds off to a successful start. You want to know all the steps, or even if you aren't a new gardener, you're a experienced gardener, and this is your first year sowing seeds indoors, you know, before the actual gardening season begins. And you've probably been looking through seed catalogs since the beginning of December, because that's usually when they first start sending out the new seed catalogs. And you're wanting to know the correct process so that you can bypass a lot of the mistakes that a lot of people have made, and myself included, with gardening and seed sowing inside. So I'm going to tell you one of the biggest problems and issues that I had with starting seeds was them being leggy. And that is a huge problem. And we'll talk about that a little bit here shortly. And well, I'll just go ahead and basically give you a basic quick explanation on what that is. Basically, that's when the stalk grows really, really long because the seedlings are trying to reach light, and the leaves are very, very short. So it's like a long stalk and a very little two true leaves that come out when the seeds first germinate. But we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Okay, so number one thing that you don't want to do and what you do want to do, this is all in the first thing. Number one, you don't want to use garden soil. Now, what do I mean by garden soil? You don't want to use a soil that's in your backyard or something that's already in your raised bed from maybe previous gardening seasons. One of my first posts for the Green Block podcast was entitled something like Ways to Navigate the Expensive World of Organic and Sustainable Foods. Okay, it may not have been that title exactly, but I was just trying to make a point that we still have a ways to go before the price of organic food starts to fall. But I also wanted to point out that there were ways to curb those grocery and farmers market bills. So here we are years later, prices have indeed fallen because of the overall demand. This is the biggest concern most people have when switching over to a healthier diet, one that contains, you know, lots of fruits and vegetables, organic and other sustainable foods, including meat. The biggest misconception about organic food is that it's expensive. That me as a blue-collar worker, or whatever collar worker you'd like to insert here, I can't afford it. And unfortunately, that's exactly what the big food manufacturers want you to think, so that you can continue to buy their cheap, commercial, chemical-filled, highly addictive foods with sugar, fats, and 30-syllable words that are supposed to be food. They want to keep us sick, foggy-brained, and fat. Then we have to go to a doctor, which the food manufacturers are already in bed with, along with the pharmaceutical companies that give us overpriced drugs we can't afford to fill their already bloated pockets on our backs. Before anyone says they can't afford organic food or a version of it, I'd advise you to go price how much cancer or diabetes care costs, then see if it's worth a few cents here and there. I mean, you're going to pay for it, your health, one way or the other, either in preventive care or aftercare. Honestly, there's no way around it. Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Green Blog Podcast, and today I'm talking about whether or not doctors should give dietary or nutritional advice to their patients. Now, as I looked up this information, as I actually researched and studied it, and along with the knowledge that I've gathered over the years, I've come to find out that doctors really aren't all that qualified to give out dietary or nutritional advice to their patients. As a matter of fact, in the U.S., there are over 900,000 active medical doctors, the vast majority of which received almost no nutritional or dietary education while at medical school. So when your doctor tells you to lose weight and eat better, that doesn't mean that he or she has the necessary tools to advise you on how to do it and how to do it correctly. Now, this is a shame because 50 to 80% of chronic diseases such as diabetes, certain cancers, and heart disease are correlated with nutrition. A doctor well-versed in nutrition could help patients prevent diseases by providing sound and medical advice far in advance. And unfortunately, there is no incentive to prevent disease in the U.S. There is much more money to be made preparing something that is broken rather than preventing it from breaking down in the first place. Now, perhaps this is why there are only 90,000 registered dietitians in the U.S., just a tenth of the number of doctors. Now, RDs, registered dietitians, only make about 25% of the money that MDs make. And for me, this is a gross, and I mean, this is just a big disparity between the two. And I think they should be making as much, in some cases probably more, because they are helping people to prevent, they're helping people with their diseases that they may have that may be nutrition-based for the most part, and they're helping them so that they don't actually have to go to the doctors. And so they're kind of like that link that I think we've forgotten about in our society overall, and I think they should definitely be included in that stepping stone to health, maybe one of the first things outside of eating better food. And worse yet, unless you're already suffering from diabetes or other nutrition-related diseases, a visit to a dietitian isn't necessarily covered by your health insurance, which you know is a huge problem right now, which means you're getting wrong, partial, or no nutrition advice from your doctor whatsoever. So yes, the system is rigged against your health. I had to say that. No, don't lose hope. You know, find out if you're covered for any kind of nutritional consultants to come by, or you can go see, or you know, seek out credible sources of nutrition advice, such as any schools that are doing research that have unbiased views on the food system itself. We're going to make sure that we're actually looking at a lot of that. But more on this in a few moments. There are many reasons to consider summer pruning of fruit trees, but the ultimate purpose remains the same. detecting what needs to be corrected or what needs correcting. So when to consider summer pruning? Well, usually the best times I've seen are July and early August, the active growing season before things slow down in the fall. Now, this also takes into consideration cases where a harsh winter and spring may delay new growth. Now, plum trees, they need to be pruned in the summer. Now, fruit trees commonly considered for other summer pruning are peach trees, nectarine trees, Japanese plum trees. You know, these fruit trees tend to grow vigorously, putting energy into lots of vegetative growth. Now, they may reach their maximum height sooner than other fruit trees, but at the expense of sturdy, stocky limbs. Now, they may also develop light and airflow issues that pruning helps to address. Now, summer pruning, pinching, example goals of summer pruning could be remove current problems, dead, damaged, diseased limbs could be removed before they become bigger stress factors for your tree. Now, you can also remove crossing or rubbing limbs that rub or cross together and limbs that grow inward towards the tree's center. You can also create a steady structure. As mentioned earlier, long weak growth should be pinched back. Hand-pinched or pruned 3 inches or so off the end of each soft leafy shoot. Repeat in late summer if side shoots continue to grow out rapidly. Now, the benefits to summer pruning of fruit trees. It enhances light exposure, and in young fruit trees, light improves the development of fruiting wood. In mature fruit-bearing trees, light improves fruit size and the quality. And in fruit trees of all ages, proper light and air circulation reduce the risk of fungal disease. Now, it also encourages sturdier branch development through pruning. Your tree will be left with a stockier, steadier growth that can support fruit in future seasons moving forward. But more on that later.
Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Grounded Podcast. Make sure to follow and share the show. Share the show via your social media, friends, and family. And leave a 5 or 4-star review to help us move up in the charts. And by the way, stars 1 through 3 no longer work. Another way you can help the podcast to grow is by subscribing to the podcast for just $2.99 a month. Just basically the cost of a cup of coffee, right? And you can also follow us on Instagram @groundedpodcast_. Thank you. Thank you so much.